in a positive way, look, I want to move a bit away from just the defence and protection of these ecosystems, but more or less move into the area, well, what can we do to regenerate? What can we do to use these natural, powerful systems as a basis for a solution to climate change? Bit of Healthy Soils Australia, we're about sort of 8 years old, a little NGO. We're a network of networks with innovative scientists, but particularly lead farmers who are doing some very clever things. And this is really how do we take this innovation and confirm it, multiply it, and then put it into that whole policy environment that we work in. So that's really what Healthy Soils Australia does. But of course, its main focus is on, regenerating the landscape. In terms of context, it's important again. I mean, you know, Heather was just talking about forests. We've got about 75 million hectares of, you know, sort of tall, closed forests, sort of forests as we would recognise them. We've got about 9 million hectares of commercial forests in Australia. But we've got 500 million hectares of rural land, land that's managed by, you know, so landholders, rural land, indigenous land, some of it's of course under conservation. But really it's that 500 million hectares in terms of scale that has enormous powerful capacity for actually changing the ecosystem or restoring ecosystems, drawing down carbon, maintaining water and all those values. So I think that's an important scale issue. In terms of the focus, we do a lot of interesting things, but I just wanted to focus mainly on the carbon biosequestration, because really it's the structure of our soils that is a foundation of, in a sense, biosystems, right? I mean, we've got sunshine, CO2, water, nitrogen, it's up there in the atmosphere. But of course, it can only be, in a sense, applied through plants, through photosynthesis. And of course, that photosynthesis is governed and limited through the nutritional availability for those biochemical processes. And so the actual soils, the nutrient supply through soils, the capacity of plants to grow in soils becomes the key limiting factor. And so it's also critical because it's the only area where we as humans can influence, both of course in the past through massive degradation, but now through wisdom, hopefully regeneration. So that's important. And I think it's important to understand that it's these same processes that we're talking about, which is in a sense the basis on which over the last 420 million years, you know, the rocks that were there at that time, 420 million years ago, were converted progressively into soils and then into our terrestrial biosystem. And of course, it's that management of those soils and biosystems which has governed the collapse of every civilization. Go through Jared Diamond and you'll see that, basically communities, countries, nations that destroy their soils, destroy themselves, and they're seen in the archaeology of history. Okay, so this is pretty fundamental stuff, and it's now our only basis, in a sense, for going forward. Now, we've already had Leslie mentioned that, some of these marine aquatic ecosystems, because they're, in a sense, anoxic, anaerobic, don't have very high oxidation, have profound, very, very high carbon sequestration capacity. And nature has that, up to 200 tonnes of carbon biosequestered per hectare per annum, prodigious amounts. But not all systems are there, but our innovative farmers are basically able to manage soils, manage systems, and they're drawing down 10 tonnes of carbon per hectare per annum. Our conventional oxidative agriculture, of course, does the opposite. As a general rule, we're still losing 5 to 10 tonnes carbon out of our conventional agriculture, and the best that, you know, like they think the conventional agriculture can do is sort of 0.2, 0.3 tonnes carbon per hectare per annum. So it's, in a sense, the problem, and we've got to step our management paradigm way outside of that, go back to some of these natural, clever microbial ecologies. And in a sense, that's what we're doing. That's our job. How do we have effective, viable cropping, grazing systems which are still sequestering these 10 tonnes plus carbon per hectare per annum? And of course, we're doing it over a much, much bigger scale. As I said, 500 million hectares of land, rural land in Australia, 20% of that sequestering 10 tonnes is 1 billion tonnes carbon drawdown per annum. That's 500% of our direct emissions, but don't pat ourselves on the back because we export so much coal. we have to take responsibility for the externality emissions from our exports. So we need to do that minimally just to cover what our friend Martin Ferguson is proposing. So basically, you know, like this is at that scale, it's pretty critical, it's pretty valuable. And it's in a sense our only way that we can actually go forward. And I want to make that point now in terms of the context that we're in, because I even at this summit, and I've been at the last the point is that basically we're still, and it was mentioned earlier by Bill, we're still talking about this thing as a problem down the future. I've just come back from the Planet Under Pressure sort of scientific colloquium in London, and that's leading up to Rio Plus 20. And of course, it was very interesting because, see, there it was a mea culpa. The UK Met Office, Hadley Centre, the whole UK government more or less says, look, we're locked into 4 to 6 degrees now. Now. Okay, it isn't there yet, but basically because of ocean lag effects, you know, we are, in a sense, locked into over 500 parts per million by 2030. And in a sense, there is nothing, I mean, it's in the pipeline, it's there. And of course, they put this sort of stunning, it's horrific, but they put these sort of diagrams up that basically, yeah, on the lands, it's not just a 4 degree, but we're going to get 7, 6, 9, 10 degrees. The ocean, sure, 1, 2 degree warming, right? So I think we're making, in terms of a time thing, that we are in a situation now where we have to do something fundamental, radical. We've got perhaps 10 years to effect system change at scales, and we have to cool this planet to avoid the dangerous feedbacks that are arising out of this locked-in warming. We've got to massively draw down carbon, and we've got to sort of then transition to this low-carbon industrial ecology. And really the point is it's these soils and these soil management processes, not excluding any of the other things that we've talked about this morning, that are fundamental in doing that, because it's basically, if we go back to where Charles Keeley sort of started the whole story, and remember basically this was 1962 when he first came out, and of course what we had, that every winter carbon would go up, and of course every summer carbon would sort of be biosequestered. So this is CO2 levels, and this is of course time. And basically what we've got is we've got CO2 going up at 2 parts per million per annum, because the deficit between, in a sense, the emissions per annum and then our drawdown capacity per annum. And so far our whole debate and our focus is, hang on, can we slow down the rate of emissions? You know, can we bring in alternative energy systems that can help that slow down? And of course we fully support that, and that has to keep going. Nobody questions that. But really, as Hansen has more or less told us, we've got to get down to 350 parts per million pronto, right? Because that's the only thing long term that we can do. And so the only way we can do that, instead of having what we now have, this 10 billion tons carbon per annum deficit between what the biosystems are doing now into the drawdown in emissions, we've basically got to say, look, we've got to massively increase the capacity of biosystems to sequester carbon.
Can I just clarify? That's a zoom in of the sawtooth curve.
Yeah. This is 1 year in the sawtooth curve. Well, and again, you had Peter Newman this morning, you know, giving us a curve. So what I'm trying to really make the point is that, yeah, there's 10 billion tons of carbon there that we need to just to stay level. We'll need at least another 10 billion tons of carbon per annum to get this drawdown. So we're talking about 20 billion tons of carbon per annum. That's about 2 billion hectares of land. There's 13.9 billion hectares of ice-free land on this planet, and we humans manage or bastardize about 10 billion hectares of it on average. So it's no big deal. It's simply 20% land regeneration, remanagement, soil management that becomes an imperative. This has massive environmental costs. Leslie asked the question of cost. Julia sort of more or less sort of said $23 per tonne of CO2. That's the thing. Well, this comes to about roughly $1.6 trillion per annum
is the ecosystem services value of this 20 billion tonnes drawdown. So in a sense, this is the cost of what our degradation and our sort of industrial ecology is. And that's in a sense important, because we have to recognise, we have to transition this whole system to actually now biosequester. The positive, the good news is, of course, we can do it. And the only way though we can do it is, of course, through these soil regeneration, vegetation regeneration processes. We have innovative lead farmers that are doing it. You know, there's about 1,000 networked in small regional groups in different sectors, different regions doing stuff. But it has to be the extension of that, the demonstration, the verification. So basically, of the 150,000 farmers in Australia, we've got 20,000 doing it, because that's a tipping point at which sectors, regions, the whole thing changes. And of course, this has to go on globally. And of course, we do work with lots of people over the world in this thing. So it's all very, very doable. It's all very positive. It's fundamental for our water security, our food security, our long-term ecosystem services. And in a sense, it's the only thing now that is going to sort of basically give us a chance over the next 10 years to transition the whole mess that we've made to have any chance of a future. We can, of course, there's a good news story in this. There is no question that nature will be using these processes to regenerate the system. The only question is, will it do it with us or after and without us?